You are listening to the Filming Life podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Holmes, founder and lead educator at the Filming Life Academy, the largest online community of family filmmakers in the world, where I teach photographers how to switch over to video and create meaningful, story-driven films with confidence. If you're not already a member, but you want to be, you can sign up to the Academy over at filminglifeacademy.com. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, you're listening to another episode of the Filming Life podcast. I'm Courtney Holmes, I'm your host. But this episode today is a little bit different because Kylie has actually interviewed one of our Filming Lifers, Amy Murgatroyd, and they're having a chat about all things filmmaking. Amy is just an absolute delight to have in our community. She's an incredible filmmaker. She's got such a beautiful heart, and I personally loved listening to this episode. We listened to Amy talk about her background and how that has really influenced her as a filmmaker, the things that are really important to her, what it is that she loves about filmmaking, and so much more. You definitely don't want to miss this episode. So please listen, enjoy, share with your friends. It's such an inspirational episode to listen to. Amy is absolutely incredible, and she's also just recently applied for and was a successful Filming Lifer Pro. So she's joined us as a Filming Lifer Pro, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have her on our team. And so I hope that you enjoy this episode, listening in, tuning in. And if you have any questions about anything, make sure that you send us an email, Courtney@filminglifeacademy.com. I'll let Kylie take it from here.
Hi everyone, this is Kylie Pertell with another episode of the Filming Life podcast, and today we have a very special episode. I have a special guest, one of our Filming Life members, Amy Murgatroyd, and she's going to chat with me today about filmmaking and passion and purpose. And if you've never seen any of Amy's films, there's going to be a whole bunch of them in the show notes on the website. So make sure you go and have a look at them because they are amazing. Not only does Amy know how to just really capture the essence of a moment, but she does it with such beautiful light and techniques. And the thing that I take away from all of Amy's films, whether it's a travel film or a personal film or a client film, is just this idea that the people, the subjects in her films are just so important and so valued. And I think that that's a really special gift that Amy has in her films. So welcome, Amy. Thank you for joining us today.
Goodness, what a tender intro. Thank you. Make me cry. We haven't even started.
Crying is okay on the Filming Life podcast.
It's so fun to chat with you in person.
It is. It's lovely.
You know, tell us. Yep. We put our educators on such a pedestal. So when you're sitting down with one, it's pretty cool.
So tell us a bit about yourself, Amy. Just give us the introduction. Who is Amy? Yeah. Where are you from?
All right. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about my family and maybe my professional background first. I guess I define myself most as a mom and a wife. I have two girls. They're aged 12 and 10, and they fill my life with wonder, but a whole lot of drama as well. I don't know if you've heard that. Have you heard that quote that boys mess up your house and girls mess up your head?
Yes, that is so true.
It is so true. And I have two tweens, so there's plenty of drama going around, but they're sweet girls and, you know, they're still cuddly. Both are very creative. And so, yeah, I just love them to pieces. And then my husband, Dave, he's really the wind in my sails. He's believed in my films even before anybody had booked a single one. He probably bails me out of 50 technical challenges a week and keeps me well supplied with external hard drives. Some gals for Mother's Day get flowers. I get external hard drives. So he's really speaking my love language. But we live in Boston. I was not born here. I was actually born in Southern California. And I moved a lot growing up. So like every 3 to 5 years, my family would pack up and move. It just usually meant my dad's job was taking us somewhere and I saw it as a big adventure. But it really caused my family to draw close when I was growing up. And I do feel that maybe that bled into to my love of family photography and films. But I've had roots in Boston now going on 22 years, which is the longest I've lived anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah. And I really love it here. It's been great. I came for grad school and I studied physical therapy. And there just never was a day I didn't love PT. It was a really heart-rending decision to leave it several years ago and choose to pursue one career path. But I feel like I took so much from PT, and borrow so much still in my business. You know, it taught me how to put people at ease quickly. You know, as a PT, I would meet somebody and 5 minutes later, my hands would be all over them, right?
Yep.
Now we're going to stretch your glutes. So I had to,
a very intimate relationship very quickly.
Very intimate, very quickly. Yeah. So I had to learn how to put them at ease really quickly in the 15 years I treated. And then beyond that, you know, empathy, I treated a spinal cord population. So paraplegics and quadriplegics whose lives were turned upside down overnight. Mm. And, you know, I'd work with them an hour and a half a day and, you know, listen to their stories. And so it taught me the importance of story. And it really demonstrated for me just the strength of the power of love as I saw these families surround these patients, you know, with such tender love. And then also just the resilience of the human spirit. And so I take so much, you know, away from that time as a PT, but I do miss it.
It sounds like it was like the perfect, I guess, kind of learning ground for, understanding people. And like you said, that empathy and really listening to people's stories, because I guess I know, from a lot of the photographers that I've met, a lot of them seem to have started out in careers and have backgrounds in those kinds of roles, like physical therapy, occupational therapy, social work. And I guess, moving into photography and filmmaking in particular, it's an extension of that that skill of really listening to people and seeing them and understanding them and wanting to, I guess, reflect back to them the best parts of themselves and the really good things that people have in life. So I always find it really interesting to hear the things that people have done beforehand, because so often you see that they've come from that caring role or service role, and it just works really nicely with, you know, what we do for our clients in our businesses.
That's right. We're really nurturing relationships in what we do.
Yeah. So what led you to being in, you know, getting into photography and filmmaking and starting a business? Was there any kind of catalyst for it, or was it just a sort of a natural progression?
Yeah. So let's see. I mean, filmmaking, we can maybe get to, because I do remember the very first film I saw and what it sparked in me. But in terms of photography, because that preceded it by about 8 years, you know, I think I was just like many moms, just harried, you know, in my day to day, you know, living in the fast lane, raising toddlers, distracted, you know, in this constant state of distraction and kind of on the edge. And life threw me a curveball. You know, I didn't see it coming. And it took the shape of a tumor on my ovary. And this tumor was quite large and fast growing. And so my doctors had very real concerns that it could be cancer. Mm-hmm. And so they prepared me. The day they found it, they prepared me for what it could mean should it be cancer. It would be a full hysterectomy, meaning no more children, the end of breastfeeding. This was 6 weeks postpartum, so I just had a baby.
Oh, wow.
So that would have been the end of that. I'd begin chemo, radiation, you know, all of this with a newborn at home. And the worst part of it was that I had 2 weeks before I could get on the surgical schedule. And in those 2 weeks, I kind of lived like I was dying, and I shouldn't have, but it's kind of one of my coping mechanisms.
Yep.
It's to prepare for the worst, you know?
Yeah.
And And in that time, like, life stopped, you know, it was like time stood still. And I just kind of saw the world around me with new and fresh eyes. You know, the ray of light on a kitchen counter, or, you know, the freckles on my daughter's nose. Like, I felt like I had this unveiled vision, or like a second sight, for the first time in my life. And that I was seeing this like layer deeper. And coming out of that, I mean, it ends so happy. You know, it was not malignant. The doctors were surprised. We were all elated. Just such relief in my heart. But my greatest fear was coming out of that experience and losing that vision. Like, I had come to like to value it so much. I had tasted something I didn't want to lose. And so I was talking to a photographer friend one day at a playdate, asking her about just taking photos. And did she think that that would help me, you know, see the way I had seen in those 2 weeks? I could already feeling it diminishing as life kind of crowded back in after those two weeks. And I just owe so much to Kelly, because 2 days later, she dropped off her old camera. She's a wedding photographer. And left it for me and said, here's my camera. It's in manual. Don't take it out of manual. So I taught myself how to shoot in manual day one. It was pretty dismal to start. I've never actually had a camera I didn't shoot in manual, thanks to Kelly's wise advice. And it just took off from there. I was just so hungry to learn and to see the way I had seen. And so that was the beginning of photography. And then the business kind of fell in my lap. I never really set out to start a photography business. I was so happy as a PT. You know, I think people were seeing my images, would ask for a session. I'd shoot it for fun. It truly was just a passion. And it kind of built out from there. So I always say that I'm a PT by training and a photographer by surprise, and now filmmaker.
Yeah, that's really, it's such an intense experience to go through, to have something like that. And I guess, you know, it is, like you say, it's a real wake up call, because so often we can kind of allow life to really just get the better of us, and we're just kind of being pulled along for the ride rather than really sort of, you know, like the platitude, like savoring the moment and that sort of thing. But you know, it's true. And there are, I guess, moments in everybody's life where, you know, we are sort of faced with our own mortality, or the mortality of loved ones. And it just, it opens your eyes and makes you realize that, you know, this life is so precious, and we only have the one life. And so, you know, finding a way to live that life with purpose, I guess, is, you know, I sometimes think it's hard for us, like when it takes something horrible to make us realize that, but then at the same time, it is kind of this blessing. Yeah. So that's really,
it really is. It's so true. I think we all know an artist whose work just kind of stands apart in a special way, and we can't put our finger on it. You can almost sense that they've experienced like a deep pain or a loss of some kind, because the way they capture their clients, you know, their subjects, their family, it's just so raw and real, right? It's like a layer deeper. And I really feel that like hardship, difficulties in life, they just kind of furrow the soul to a point that like, when you're exposed to story, when you're exposed, you know, to the joys and sorrows of other people, they just take root, and it really shows up in the work. And so, you know, for me, I feel like that this sort of second sight is something I have to work at, right? Like my life has been relatively easy by comparison to many who've endured real hardship. So it's something I have to train, but maybe there's hope in that we can all sort of train that second sight, you know?
Yes, I think so. Definitely. So you started your photography business first, and you'd been doing that for quite a few years. And then what led you to filmmaking?
Yeah. So I had been in business 8 years, and I had a photography friend who took a filmmaking class, and she posted her first film. It was like her final assignment. And I sat there with like my jaw on the floor because this my storyteller heart was seeing like all of the things that I've been craving in my work, you know, the movement and the voice and the personality. And if I take it like a step back on my life, I can see so many signs pointing me in the direction of films. A lot of my photography work had implied movement. And so, you know, all the photos that are hanging around our home of my girls, they're all captured in motion. So that was something like my eye was drawn to, certainly in my own photography. I'm also just love a good sappy song, you know, I'll just bust into tears, good song. So when you combine photos, you know, or I should say imagery and song, man, there's nothing better.
Oh yeah. I totally understand that. Yeah. I think I remember the first time I saw, you know, like a family film, it was Courtney's, a friend of mine had said, oh, I have this friend and I think you'd like her work. You should look her up on Facebook. And, you know, so I went onto Courtney's Facebook page and there was this film that she'd made. And I was just instantly like, oh, this is it. Like, it. Oh my gosh. like this is it. And it was kind of that same thing where, you know, I loved my photography and I loved what I was doing, but you know, there was always something inside of me that knew that there was something more that I could be doing. There was another kind of level or layer to that I could take it. And so when I saw Courtney's film and it was just like, that's what I need to be doing. Like I love photography and I still love doing it. But yeah, there's just that something about film that grabs you and draws you in. And I think for, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, anybody can learn the skills and can pick it up and learn how to do it. But I think those that kind of stick with it and do it in the long run, really it's kind of because I guess that they've had this little seed in them for the longest time. And it's just been waiting for that little bit of water to really make it grow and blossom into this, you know, incredible passion that it becomes for so many of us.
Yeah.
Did you find it hard when you first started getting into filmmaking to sort of make that transition from being a photographer to a filmmaker?
Oh, heavens, yes. Yeah, definitely. I had been in business for 8 years before I offered films. And actually, I should say as an aside, like this was a big year for my business. I officially pivoted to films. And so every package that gets booked receives a film. And I have like short mini films that are with primarily, you know, photo packages, you know, mid-length, maybe mid-length moving portrait or legacy films, and then full-length documentary family films. And so, it took me a long time to get there. And, you know, I think it happened at such a time that I was really established in my photography. When I think back to my beginnings as a photographer, like I was totally in awe of my work, which is funny, right? Because I didn't know enough not to think it was amazing.
Yes.
So if you remember those first images, you're like, oh, look at the bokeh. Sis, I did that.
Yes. It's that whole, you know, before you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so everything that you make is just, it's amazing to you.
That's right. And so, you know, I was voracious and like learning about photography, taking lots of classes, and I grew and grew leaps and bounds over the years. But filmmaking arrived at a time in my life when things were going really well. You know, I was, I had pretty good composition. I had just a really good sense for the flow of a session. You know, I was nailing focus like a boss, and then films come along and first, you know, it strips me of focus, autofocus. And then it stripped me of a lot of pride. You know, at the time I was starting to get published. I was writing for photography blogs. I was winning awards and other things. And this felt good. This felt like, you know, I'd really worked hard to this point. And then I toggle over to video and suddenly I'm at, you know, back at the very beginning. And so it was so humbling for me to be in that place. And I look at the people I'm meeting and the Filming Life Academy, and right out of the gate, they are so far ahead of where I started. And it says so much about the Academy and you educators, truly. Like, that just wasn't my story. I had so much to learn. And, you know, so I'm very much self-taught. I certainly took some classes along the way, but and then, you know, you get so much education on YouTube, but found my way to Filming Life much later. In fact, you know, I got my beginning, I think, before the Academy even existed. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just so happy to be here and to be in a community that's just inspiring me every single day. And yeah, just enriching my own creativity.
Yeah, I think I'm always blown away by some of the first films that people share. Yes. In the network, you know, they may have only made one before they joined, and then, you know, they really dive into the material and then they share, you know, their first one after joining, and you're just like, yeah. Oh, wow. Like, when I look at that and say, compare it to like my first film, I'm just like, holy cow, how are they so good so quick? Totally.
You need like a Dramamine to watch my early films. They're so shaky.
Yes. Yes, it's so like that. But it's, you know, it is, you know, like what we said with that, you don't know what you don't know. I think that there's a beauty in that when you first kind of take something up, in that it kind of allows you to really create from the heart. Mm-hmm. And so even though technically those first films that we make may not be, you know, winning any awards or ticking any boxes for technicalities or whatever, there's a real rawness and truth to those films, because yes, at the end we have to kind of just strip it back to what really what we're really feeling inside, because, you know, the technical things will come with practice, but that idea of, you know, shooting what you love and what is moving you and wanting to make these films, that's all got to be inside you from the start.
I love what you're saying. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think maybe at the heart of that is that like feeling of smallness you have as you're starting out, right? Like you're getting out of the way of the work because you feel inadequate to the challenge, right? You're just starting out. But that smallness, that humility allows like inspiration to breathe and the work to like unfurl itself. And I think that's something that I try to hold on to, is a little of that humility as I continue to pursue films, because you will never arrive. Like, I'm never going to be Scorsese. So like, there is no, like, the horizon goes on and on and on. And there's these leading lines to a very long road that just like has no destination. And I love that feeling, you know, that none of us will actually arrive, that there's always more to learn, always something to reach for. And so somebody's beginning isn't that different than my middle, right? In the sense that, you know, it just stretches on and on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're capable.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, that's an important thing to kind of think about. It's very easy to kind of get caught up in looking at other people's work and seeing, you know, what they're making of their first film or what they're making of their 100th film. And, you know, allowing ourselves to kind of, I guess, sometimes forget the reason why we were drawn to it in the first place. And so, you know, for me, I know that that's something that I've struggled with, but I guess what I always, when I go through times like that, that's often when I'll go back and I'll watch some of those old films that I made. Like, so some of my first films, my girls were only 3 and 5 when I first started making the films, and they're now almost 10 and 8. And like I said, like the first films that I made, like they're technically not great, but when I watch them, I can see that passion that I had for it. And I can, you know, it's not just this little time capsule that I've got of my girls when they were, you know, in this ridiculously cute stage, but I can see, you know, how I was feeling as a person and that passion that I had for, you know, making these films for them. And really, you know, for me, my driving thing has always been about, with my films, I want to, I guess, show people how important they are. And that's always been kind of what has driven my work. And so the times when I kind of get caught up in, oh, you know, I've got to do this perfect or this isn't perfect or, you know, I need to be better or whatever, I go back and I watch those old films and I remind myself of, you know, why it is that I'm doing it in the first place, because I want to create something that somebody can watch and they can see just how important they were, in that moment in time.
It's like we're affirming meaning, right? Like,
yeah,
with these films, we're saying you matter, your story matters.
Yes.
And it's beautiful. It is beautiful to my eyes and to my heart. And I think I just love that. What a cool job.
It is. It's like the best job in the world. I think that's, you know, one of the things that I find when, you know, I guess kind of the first year that you sort of start making films or getting into photography, at first you dive in and you're just doing it for the love and the passion of it. And you just, you know, like you don't know what you don't know. So you don't know, you know, if things aren't quite right or whatever, and then you work at it and you move along, and then you get to a point where suddenly you do know what's good and what's not, and you can look at your work and go, oh, actually it's not that great. And that's when I think a lot of people kind of start to hit a wall or they hit resistance. And so and that's often the time that will make or break a person as to whether or not they continue on with it. And so for me, I like to think that that's where the internal work starts to come, is it's when you've got to sort of sit down and say to yourself, so why am I really doing this? What is my purpose with what I'm doing here? And what is my, I mean, you know, everybody talks about, oh, what's your why? But it really is kind of important, and it doesn't need to be anything super fancy. It can just be one line that expresses, you know, how you want to interact with the world and what you want to achieve with your films. And so I know for me that, you know, my biggest why is that I want people to feel important.
Yeah.
I want people to know that they matter and that they are worthy of love. They are worthy of being captured and being remembered, because I know for me self-worth and self-confidence is something that I've struggled with, you know, for a large part of my life. And particularly you know, at the time when I found films, it was at a time in my life when I was very low, and I was feeling worthless. And I found filming, and it gave me that purpose, and it really kind of revealed to me why it was that I wanted to do this for other people, because I know what it's like to feel worthless. And I don't want anyone else to feel like that. And I want to create things that on people's worst days, when they do feel worthless, they can watch this film and they can be reminded of just how important they are. And so I think finding, you know, that inner purpose and drive for what we do is what gets us through that hard stage where, you know, we are doubting what we're making and we're thinking that it's not as good as what it could be. You know, I think that is what really then fuels us to push past the hard stuff. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Oh, and I just love how your story, you know, that experience of feeling worthless is what drives your purpose today. And so your story is creating new stories, you know, and I think it's so important that we create from our story. Like I truly believe that inspiration whispers to us and it begs us to sort of incarnate art, you know, like, and that is filtered to us. Like, I believe that inspiration in large part is something external to me, but it's filtered through my story, just as yours was. It's filtered through my heart, my mind, and my story. And I think when we create from our story, as you are, Kylie, like that is such a position of strength. I often like to do these sort of mental gymnastics, and I've often thought about like the rules of composition in photography and how I can apply them to life, right? And yep. So if you think of the rule of thirds, right, like the most interest, the most energy is created at the intersection of the horizontal and vertical lines. And I often think that that's, for me, where passion and purpose intersect. Like in my life, where passion and purpose intersect, that's my rule of thirds. That's where the most energy, the most excitement, the most interest occurs. And when I'm working from that place, and whether it's client work or a personal film, like you just feel it. You just kind of feel that warm rush, right? It's intoxicating. I love it. And for me in business, like I didn't learn this until about year three as a photographer. So I was driving on passion. And that passion started burning out, like it fizzled, because passion will burn out long before purpose, right? Yes. You know, if passion is the flame, then purpose is the fuel. And I hadn't discovered this. So I was 3 years in, about to give up a business that was really just getting going because I was just so exhausted. And I never had stopped to really consider my purpose. What I was trying to do was make pretty images. And accomplishing it, but feeling void. Like I was sending stuff into the universe and it was returning to me. I mean, I think it meant something to my clients, but to me, it just felt like empty somehow. And so I kind of clawed my way out of that hole in year three by really thinking hard about purpose. And it culminated in like a business statement. I think you alluded to this, like it can just be like one line, but if you write out that purpose statement and put it somewhere or memorize it, it kind of becomes your totem and the thing that drives your work. And so that mission statement, so to speak, is what helps you make every business decision, you know, even what projects to take and which ones to turn down.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the really important things that it, you know, it's not something that you kind of realize to start with. You kind of do have to sort of go through the hard bits and I guess almost reach that kind of breaking point with things to really strip back all the noise and boil it down to, you know, why is it that you're doing it? And, you know, for some people, they may realize that their purpose doesn't actually lie in running their business or, you know, doing it for clients or whatever, and that their purpose lies in, you know, doing it for themselves or and maybe doing something else as a business or for work or whatever, and that this becomes something that they can use as a gift to bless others with. Other people find that it does fuel the purpose of their business and gives them kind of, I guess, a guiding light or a North Star to focus on and guide their decisions and help you push through those kind of days when it feels like it's really hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. We like these cameras we hold in our hand, they are such powerful instruments. These are instruments for hope and for healing. And when we come to realize that, it really sort of changes our perspective on a session, I believe. I recently sold a lens and, I don't know what inspired me to tell the guy, but I texted him, you know, enjoy her. I put a soul in her. And I really believe that like, we're putting a soul in our equipment, like, because think of the love that it's bearing witness to. So I love that your heart just resonates with purpose. I think it's so important. And it's interesting because I think I sense the most purpose in some of the hardest places. I photograph a lot of, you know, joyful, happy, healthy families. And it fills my heart and I love it, but I realized that didn't reflect reality right? Mm-hmm. And so I approached the Children's Hospital here in Boston and asked if they would like a volunteer photographer. Now, they didn't have any. This was something they created for me. And to this day, I go into the Children's Hospital, not during COVID, so I hope to resume soon, but and photograph chronically and terminally ill children and their families bedside. And for me, it's that perfect blend of sort of my comfort in a hospital setting and my background as a PT. And also the my love of capturing raw emotion, it renders my heart in a way that no class could, like no photography or filmmaking workshop could ever open sort of the channels of my heart that, you know, a hospital room and a children's hospital does. And so it's purpose that like carries me tenderly through these sessions, or helps me fight back tears when, you know, for instance, four nurses and a respiratory therapist take 20 minutes to arrange a child in intensive care so that the mom can get in the bed, you know. And the patient I'm thinking of died 2 days later. But what we're doing matters, right? We're affirming meaning, and we don't have to, we can affirm all the love and the joy we bear witness to as well. But I think we can all attest to those invitations that our camera gets into some really hard places too. And that is just sacred ground.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I love that. I love that you do that. I think that's, I know for me, when it comes to working with clients, particularly, it's about so much more than just the actual session and like the physical act of like taking the photos or creating the films. And I know, you know, not everyone kind of has the same approach for me, but when I you know, before I even book a client, I really like to get on the phone with them so that I can chat with them, get to know them, relate to them. And then, you know, as we move through the booking stages and we get closer to the shoot, I like to then arrange like a Zoom call or a phone call or whatever to really get to know them. And I send them a questionnaire that asks, you know, there are a couple of fairly, I guess, deep questions that I ask my clients, but I really, you know, my goal is always to develop a relationship with them so that they're not just a client, but, you know, they're a friend, you know, they're a real person with a real story and real struggles that have informed what their life is now and their purpose or, you know, their reason for why they live the way that they do. And so I find like for me, taking that time to really get to know my client as people makes such a difference to how I approach when I make the film, because, you know, these are people that they're not just someone that I've just rocked up and met on the day. Like I've spent time developing and nurturing this relationship with them. You know, I love to hear what their kids do and I want to hear how they're going and how have they been and how are they going? And particularly now after, you know, this crazy 2020 that we've had, you know, I feel that that's more important than ever because, you know, my people, when they fill in their questionnaires, will sometimes be extremely, extremely raw and very honest and open. And, you know, like I assure them that whatever they answer on their questionnaire is going to be completely confidential. Like I will never share that with anyone. And it kind of invites them to sort of open up. And sometimes people write things in their questionnaires that they've never really said out loud to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really kind of, you know, that's a really kind of important position. And I take that very seriously.
Huge and trust.
Yeah. And I feel that, you know, while what they've told me in their questionnaire may not be in the film and it's not going to be, you know, what the film is about or anything like that, it gives me this kind of deeper understanding and it allows me to relate to the client and I guess fulfill what my purpose is, which is just giving them a chance to be seen mm-hmm. and to be heard and, you know, to have someone reassure them and let them know that, you know, despite all of these challenges, they are an important person and you know, they're doing a good job. That's one of the things I think, particularly for mums, we don't hear that very often. Like, you're doing a good job. We feel like a failure. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, often through our work and what we give to our clients is that reassurance that, you know, despite all the crappy stuff and the hard days and all the rest of it, you know, you're doing a good job.
I love how you describe that. Makes me want you to film my family. Come to Boston, Kelly.
As soon as they open our borders.
There you go. But it's so true. I think, you know, from the very first inquiry, you know, to the questionnaire, to the very last clip that we take, we're gently wooing clients to open their heart to our lens. And to do that, they really have to trust us. I think there's a mentality shift for me, even in the word taking images or taking photos versus receiving photos. Yes. Like we're not there to take something from our clients, are we? Like mm-hmm. we're just to there to sort of receive who they are. I used to show up to sessions. This is, I feel like I had learned this lesson before filmmaking, but I would show up to photography sessions, you know, expecting them to be flawlessly dressed and, you know, them to be on time and dad to keep his phone in his pocket and to help mom keep the kids in order for me. Right. And what's wrong with this picture? Like, what's my starting point? It's me. Yep. Like, I'm not the hero in this story. My clients are the hero in their story. And so I really learned that it's my job to create a context where like a frazzled mom and a distracted dad and squirmy kids can like press into each other and to experience connection. And for me to document that as almost like this visual totem for them to return to and be like, mm-hmm. that's us. That's us on a good day. And that's us to aspire to on a bad day.
Yes. Yes. So how do you, is there anything that you do in particular to prepare your clients so that you can meet them in that place and really provide that for them?
Yeah. So like many of us, you know, I have the questionnaire and it's very detailed. And then I Zoom or speak with a client once or twice before a session, you know, depending mm-hmm. on what kinks we need to work out. I would say a big piece is pre-visualizing for me. And my pre-visualization has taken like new shape over the years. And so I'll detail that a little for you. So, you know, of course, by the time I arrive at the film session, like I have a pretty good sense of the players, you know, I have a feel yep. for each of the individual players, sort of what makes them tick, the things they like, and what we hope to capture. And so I used to sit in my car and sort of pre-visualize this beautiful shoot, you know, when I was first starting in filming, you know, pre-visualizing these dreamy shots and everything going flawlessly.
Yeah.
And I've kind of stopped doing that. And here's why. Like, I really believe that the most powerful sessions I've had is when I very intentionally pre-visualize like a beautifully imperfect session. And so in essence, what I'm doing is I'm like stripping myself of expectation mm-hmm. such that when I walk in that door, I'm a blank slate, right? Like they get to just write their story on me. I have mm-hmm. no expectations. I have no shot list, no scripted, beautiful film in my head that whatever their version of beauty is what I'm going to receive, not take. And then translate it, you know, through my heart into something tangible that they will have for always. And I think so that pre-visualization is like really, really sort of upside down for me. And, you know, it's funny. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, but like the eye, as well as our cameras, see upside down. So like what we see in the world is translated to our retina upside down, and it's no different on a camera. And so that's what inspired this for me, as I realized like I need to go into these sessions almost seeing this upside down, not mm-hmm. like, you know, beauty as, you know, on a beauty hierarchy, but like that beautiful and perfect. And And then beyond that, you know, I think, you know, faith is a big part for me too. So I will sit in the car and just kind of dwell on each family member, and I'll ask, you know, just to be able to see the light in the family and all around them. And that, you know, I would be a conduit of God's love for them. And so that's a piece of sort of my pre-visualization. But by the time I walk in the door, I'm like hopelessly in love with this family. And so it becomes really easy just to have their story, you know, written on my heart. And I think another big piece is being very small in my own picture. So, mm-hmm. you know, as I enter that door, what I'm leaving back in the car is like my baggage, like my insecurities, my fears. I've had to leave some big things in the car, you know, the pending ultrasound for the new growth on my ovary last week. And that sort of thing, you just like, you just have to clear your mind of and make yourself so small so that they can become so big in the story. And I can take that approach pretty far in the sense that like, I almost heart meld with the client. I don't know if this ever happens to you, but do you ever like film kids almost as though they're your own? And so you get to the end of the session and you're like, right?
Yes.
I need time to almost snap back into my identity mm-hmm. after a film, because we're with them so long and you're like, you're heart melding with your clients to a point that like, I need time. If my client session is a 10-minute drive from my home, I literally have to sit in my car an extra 10 minutes to just like to reacclimate.
Yes. 100%. I know exactly what you mean. It's, you know, when I think of particularly all the kids in the families that I film, like they're my little babies, you know, like, I remember them all. I love how you approach that. And I really like that idea of, you know, stripping back your expectations of what the session is going to be like, because I think, you know, it's very easy to kind of have an idea or a preconceived notion or, you know, an expectation of what we want to capture. And so often when we get there, it's different. If we've had this idea in our head and we don't take the time to kind of strip that away, mm-hmm. That's when we can lead to, you know, being disappointed with what we've done. I mean, it's normal to walk away from a session and be like, oh, I could have done this better, or I could have done that better. Absolutely. Like, you know, there's always something we could do mm-hmm. better. But I think the thing that makes you keep going back is that kind of remembering that, well, you know, it's not actually about you. And I think, you know, the more you're able to practice that and get better at sort of stripping away those expectations mm-hmm. and being, like you said, open to receiving mm-hmm. what the family has mm-hmm. to give you or show you, mm-hmm. Really does make such a difference mm-hmm. in you know, what we then end up capturing for our clients. Like it's a mentality.
You're right. And I love how you practice this too, because what I'm hearing from you is that the process is almost as if not more important than the product. Mm. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Like the session itself is everything. Like everything. Mm. And to me, the product, the film, is only proof that like something special happened. It's just the icing. And I think I would bet that for your clients, Kylie, like the majority of them already love their film before they've seen it. Like the minute you step out of their door, they're already in love with their film, because you made them feel seen and loved and known. And I think that's where, you know, we can get tripped up on making it about the product, and really it's not. Like where I've seen the most beautiful sessions, you know, I should say the most beautiful sessions come out of those where clients are made to feel seen and loved and truly affirmed. It's something I think about a lot.
I love this. I could talk about this all day.
I know, me too. I'll tell you, you know, we all get those lovely glowing responses. Sometimes they don't come as quick as we'd like. You're like, I spent 20 hours. Where's the that reply. But I did once leave a session, and about 5 minutes after I left their home, I receive a text, and I look down, and I can get tears in my eyes remembering it, because all it said was, "What was that?" And that was all caps. And it just cemented, like, that's it. That's it. It's about the process. Like, it's about the session. Like, she already loves the film. She hasn't seen it. I already love the film. I haven't seen it, because it wasn't about the film. It was about creating this context for them to just like hit pause and be present. You know, we are just like living as like hamsters on a wheel. Mm-hmm. And like, when we can create the context to just stop and look and linger there, like, just amazing things happen. This is what we're created for. We're created to be in relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think one of the best, often some of the feedback that I get is, you know, clients will say, "Oh, my kids are asking, you know, like they want to do it again. They want you to come back tomorrow." And, you know, often when I receive that feedback, I think to myself, that really, it's not about me. It's not that they like me as a person, but what those kids have attached to me is that when I was there, their parents were there. Their parents, you know, and like, I know that I do it. Like, I'm guilty of, you know, spending time on my phone or being in my office working and, you know, just leaving the girls to kind of their own devices and doing their own things, and they're happy. And, you know, it's easy to forget that, like, the most important gift we can give our children is that gift of time and presence and, you know, really being there present. And, you know, and it's hard. And for a lot of parents at the end of the session, they're exhausted because they have spent 3 to 4 hours completely present and switched on with their kids and really soaking them in. And so, you know, when a client says to me afterwards that, "Oh, my kids loved having you there and they want you to come back," that's when I know that I think I've done the right thing, because what those kids are actually projecting is that while I was there, they had the best time with their parents and with their family. They did these, you know, it was this 3 or 4 hours of uninterrupted time where they had their parents' full attention. And I feel like that is such a special gift that we can give our clients, and, you know, that permission to stop and take time and to really, you know, just soak in everything that we love about our family and be reminded of why we love our family in the first place. I think that's kind of the legacy that you want these films to leave. Like, not that everything was perfect or all the rest of it, but that real connection that we have, that, you know, in those moments when we do have time, and it happens a lot when you travel, you know, like, and that's what I love about, you know, traveling with your kids, is because often everything else of your life is stripped away and you've only got, you know, your family, one suitcase and a hotel room. You know, it's that stripping away of all the distractions. And so then what you're left with is that connection and how much you love each other. And so, I feel like that's what our sessions can provide.
Yes. And I don't think we have to be ashamed that our work often reflects the best version of that family. You know, I think some of the criticism sometimes leveraged against, you know, photographers and maybe to an extent filmmakers is like, "Oh, well, we make everyone's life look prettier than it is," you know? And I don't really believe that. I really believe that if you think of like a loved one you've lost, what, you know, the memories that stay with you are the tender, beautiful ones, right?
Yes.
A lot of the bad memories tend to wash away. And, and that's what we're doing with these films, is we're creating a time capsule, a memory for these clients and for their kids, and for their kids to show their own kids. Right. And so, I carry no guilt that I'm looking for the best attributes of this family, because every family has them. And
exactly.
And if I'm stitching together a beautiful story, that's because they're a beautiful family. And, and if, you know, you know, their kids have meltdowns in the grocery store like mine used to. That's real cute. But that's probably not the memory they're going to want in 20 years.
And it's one of those things where at the time when your kid has a meltdown in the grocery store, it's like the worst thing because you're just so... But in 20 years' time, when you think back to that memory, you're going to, like, you will laugh at it because, you know, like, you're kind of removed from it and you can kind of see, like, the beauty or the funny thing in that. But one of the questions that I ask on my questionnaire is I ask the client to, you know, imagine that it's 25 years in the future and their children are sitting down to look at the photos and the film from their session. And I ask, you know, what is it that you want your children to learn or to know about you and your family from those,
films?
Feel free to. But I find I love it that often that the answers that I get to that question, that often then is the one thing out of anything that I learn out of the questionnaire, that's the one thing that I then aim to make sure that the film that I make for them embodies, because it tells me maybe what their insecurity is about, you know, maybe like they're worried that they don't show their kid that enough and they want their kid to, you know, they want to remind them of that, or, you know, it's something that, or it's something that is really important to them. And it's the one thing that they want their children to remember. They want that to be their parenting legacy or their family legacy. And so, you know, I love the answers that I get to that question because it really does that kind of forms the foundation. And then everything else is built around that. And I agree. Like, I think that, you know, it's not a bad thing to create these films that remind people of that and that love and the good things in their life. And it can be something that, like you said, on a bad day, you can go back and watch and you can see that, oh, actually, you know, it's not all bad. Like we do have this amazing life and we do have fun and I'm so incredibly blessed. Oh, well, thank you so much for talking with me today, Amy. This has been a beautiful chat. I've really enjoyed getting to know you better and really understanding the heart behind the work that you create. And I can really see that in the films that you make. It's you have a real gift for really connecting with people and stripping away all that outside noise and finding that love and connection. And it's a really special gift.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much. It means a lot.
Well, for all our listeners, I will share some of Amy's films in the show notes on the blog. And we also have an interview with Amy on the blog, which is amazing. You should read it. So I'll link that as well. But yeah, thank you so much for chatting with us today, Amy. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for this time. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.